Welcome back to the Mindset Forge podcast. I'm Bart and Brian, your host. I'm back again to give you another awesome episode. This one is a doozy. I had so much fun interviewing Dan Duran. Now, this guy is in his 50s. He is an ultra Ironman athlete. And we'll go into what that means. But this guy has done not just Ironmans, but double the distance, triple the distance. Oh my gosh, five times the distance of the swim, bike, and run for an Ironman. So just an incredible athlete, but that can be unrelatable. But the cool part about Dan is he is the most relatable dude on the planet. He talks about some of his addictions earlier in life. He's just got such a perspective on family, wife, all the things that really impact who he is today. And I say that because some people, when they hear about these ultra Ironman, ultra marathoners, ultra athletes, it can be a little bit inaccessible in terms of we don't think this person is anything like us. But as you'll find in the conversation, there's a lot of very honest things about Dan that I think are very relatable and can really help you wherever you're at, take that step forward to being more disciplined, having better habits, and leaning into family and being the best version of yourself. So listen up and enjoy the heck out of this episode. But before we get to that, a couple things I want to talk to you about. First off, I want to shout out three people. My first guy, his name's Chris T. Now, Chris is in the Houston area. He reached out to me because of the podcast. He's a longtime listener, and he signed up for one of my online coaching programs. So he and I will be working together for the next 6 months. He's super excited, and I love that he jumped all in. The other two I want to shout out today is Tiffany and Hayden. I won't leave their last names out, but Tiffany and Hayden are concierge clients of mine here in the Austin area. They live downtown and I see them one-on-one and I do all the nutrition stuff. We talk about steps. We talk about sleep. We talk about everything. Last but not least, I want to talk about an event coming up here in Austin, Texas. If you're in the Austin area, perk your ears up a little bit here. There's a Biohacker World conference in Austin on April 6th and 7th. They're going to have a ton of speakers, a bunch of businesses that are in the space of longevity, fitness, biohacking, wellness, all that kind of stuff. So there'll be presentations. There's going to be a lot of cutting edge stuff. I'll be there and I've got some tickets to give away. So stay tuned for next week's episode to find out how you can get free tickets to this event. By the way, all my concierge clients, both in person and online, get free tickets as part of the concierge program. So without further ado, let's find out why Dan is called the laughing linebacker in the world of Ironmans and ultra Ironmans, and get his perspective on being middle-aged, mindset, hacks that he's figured out, and hear his story and let that inspire us to be a better version of ourselves each and every day. You were known as the laughing linebacker.
Yes.
And I love
that. You remember that.
Oh my God. Well, and I also listened to a few podcasts where you've been on.
So okay.
Done my homework. But yeah, the laughing linebacker. Give us the history of where that comes from. And then, obviously talk about distance racing and things like that.
Sure. Doing. Yeah. Wow. I've only mentioned that a few times, so you definitely dug it out of somewhere. And before I answer your question, I just want to thank
sure,
you. I just want to thank you for having me. For the listeners out there, it is a podcast. And if you haven't had a chance to see Bart or meet him in person, he is an imposing figure. He's very tall. He's very well built. He's very handsome. And I wouldn't say intimidating, but he's got a command presence about him. But as soon as he starts talking to you, he's all heart. So you made a real impression on me at that conference, and I appreciate you having me here. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan.
So, all right, the laughing linebacker, that particular event, I was doing a double Ironman. So it's twice the distance of an Ironman. 4.4 mile swim, 52 and some change, 53 mile run, and the bike is 224 miles. And I was on the run section, and people are hurting, and you do that continuously, you just go straight through. And people are hurting, legs are hurting, you're suffering from sleep deprivation at that point. It's painful. And every time I'd come around the corner of the loop on the run and there was all these rooters there cheering us on, I would smile at them and laugh at them. And sometimes I try to get a little jiggy or do something funny. And they're like, okay, I know you're suffering. I know you're in pain. And I'm 6'1". I wish I was taller. I swear I'm 6'2", but I'm not. At the time, I'm racing at about 208 pounds. And I, you know, I played college football. I was not a linebacker, but I'm pretty muscular for an endurance athlete. And so they came up with the saying, the laughing linebacker, because I would smile, which for those of you that study behavior in the mind and, mental strength, just the mere act of smiling will change how you feel on the inside. And so I would make myself smile to lessen the pain.
Yeah, that's great. And listeners, write that down. Like the next time you're in that, you know, place where you don't want to be, you don't want to go that extra mile to do that extra rep, just try smiling.
Yeah, just
see what happens to your entire physicality, by you know, psychology and all that.
That's great. And I got to add, because I got a bazillion stories, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but at that same location, on one of those laps, one of the athletes was so sleep deprived and so disoriented that he just was standing there and looking around like counting butterflies. I'm like, dude, are you all right? Yeah, I'm all right. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm good. And I did another lap and he started going the wrong way and headed into the forest. So there was all kinds of stuff going on out there, and laughter was what helped me.
You have to find a way, because, you know, it's kind of this, a lot of people have been introduced to this type of ultra, like, you know, and it's not just an ultra marathon. You're obviously doing like swimming, biking, and then you're doing a 50 miler. Like, so it's all these things, you know, people have been introduced to this more, maybe because of David Goggins recently with his stories and mindset and all that kind of stuff. But I love what you and your wife had an agreement on. It's like, and you can go into detail, but like, unless this is life threatening or I'm going to have an injury for the rest of my life, do not pull me out. Talk about that relationship with you and your spouse and how you guys kind of manage that.
Yeah,
for these big events.
Great, great questions.
Because I'm using your stories, but like this is, guys listening, this is mindset 101, 201, 301, and 401, all the way up to masters right here. So listen to this, because this is right on with how you want to be framing your mindset. Go ahead.
Yeah, indeed. And it is mindset. Again, I'm built more like a football player. I am not made to go fast. And so, you know, how do you train for double Ironman? I've done triple Ironmans. I've done my last big one was a quintuple. So five times. How do you train for that? You finally, you go, okay, that's enough. I can't do that much training. It's actually mental more than it is physical, much more. And so going into it, you go into it mentally prepared. And I can give a lot of analogies. I actually just had shoulder surgery a month ago, and I can tell you how come that recovery has been going so great. It's about going into it mentally prepared. And so part of that preparation is your team. And my crew, my team is my wife. She is the crew leader, crew chief, and she runs the show, and she's amazing. She did say she retired after the quintuple, though. She had blisters all over the bottom of her feet. I had none. And she said, that's it. I'm retired. I can't do this anymore, because she slept less than I did over the course of 5 days. So we start a race, and I always have this talk with her, every one of these. And that is, no matter what, do not let me quit. Because your mind goes to all kinds of places. I've hallucinated a lot on the triple Ironman, and I wanted to quit. And she made me keep going. That's a funny story. I wanted to quit on the quintuple, and she made me keep going. Because your mind just goes weird places. And I said, unless I have sustained an injury, which will affect me the rest of my life, not that I can heal from in the next few months, do not let me quit. And that was the deal. That was written in stone. And she stood by it. And I've never suffered an injury other than really bad blisters, and a lot of pain. But she's like, nope, you're not quitting.
Yeah. You know, and it's you can listen to these stories and be like, yeah, I could do that, right? But like, talk about that moment. Like, some people call it the wall, like the pain cave, like that moment where you're hallucinating, like, you know, your body is just telling you, this is a terrible idea. Like, you should stop. You should go to, you know, the hospital or whatever. Like, What's that relationship with yourself in that moment? Because sometimes you don't have your wife right there. I mean, you can't really rely on her to be there in those moments. It's really you against you. Like, talk about how you self-obsess or figure those moments out.
Well, and that's an interesting dichotomy too. By the way, there's a great book. It's called How Bad Do You Want It? I can't remember the author's name, but I read that years ago. And that's that mental component and how it relates to the physical component. But I'll give the, it's a dichotomy because I believe that if I were alone and my wife weren't there, and I've been in those situations where, whether it's an ultra run, like a marathon, ultra mountain run, like I did this last summer, and it's just sucking, or the Leadville Marathon, I don't have somebody next to me to say, don't quit. But my mind goes to those people, those whys, my family, my wife, my children, my mother, who inspire me or who I want to do, you know, to do good for, to leave a legacy with of you don't ever freaking give up. That's just the way it goes. What kind of example will I set if I quit? So if you're by yourself, you got to not take it up a notch. When you know you get your wife there, you can be a little more whiny, but and verbalize it. And so I'll tell you that the example was probably the triple was the toughest one. I was just wrapping up the second marathon. So I was on like mile 40 or 50 or something out of 70 plus miles. And the blisters on my feet were really bad. And I'd never experienced blisters that bad before. And I was sleep deprived. I'd slept, 15 minutes, 10 minutes. And this is the third day. And, you know, you can't eat enough calories. You lose your appetite. So my body is just drastically undernourished, even though I'm still trying to eat. And I'm hallucinating. I'm seeing things come up out of the ground. There were people talking to invisible people next to me. It was all kinds of crazy stuff going on. It was like taking like a wild mushroom ride without the drugs. So the ground was moving and plants were becoming animals. It was nuts. And so what I hallucinated was that the bottom of my feet, if you're into anatomy and physiology, like the tibia and fibula, the two bones that go down into your ankle, those were what I was walking on. They were stumps. So I was thunk, 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 walking on the ends of my bones, and the bottoms of my feet were bleeding all over the pavement. That's what I saw, and that's what I felt. And it hurt like hell. And that's when I wanted to quit. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm going to finish the second marathon. I'll say, hey, I almost did it. And what happened was the sun was just starting to rise. And my son had woke up. He was a little guy at the time, maybe 8 years old, 10 years old, somewhere in there. And he rode his bike up and saw me. And he goes, how you doing, Dad? And I go, not too good, kid, son, you know, not too good. I think I'm going to call it quits, buddy. I'm hurting. And he looked at me and he goes, Mom's not going to be happy. So he rode back to where all the, you know, all our, we keep all our stuff and all our support crew. And he told my wife, and she had just tried to lay down to take a nap. And she was hot. I came in and she met me right there. She's like, you are not going to quit. You have put us through all this training and you're gone all the time. And she was getting in my head, right? She was getting in my head. And there was another athlete out there. He goes by the nickname Kaz. He's an amazing ultra athlete. And he had blisters on the bottom of his feet. And she said, Dan, Taz is out there lancing his blisters, bleeding all over the ground for you. He's doing it for you, Dan, because he cares about you and he wants you to win. And I'm like, I started crying. I'm like, oh my God, Taz is doing that for me. And she's like, yes, let's change your socks and get your butt back out there. Oh my God. And I got some food in me. I closed my eyes for 10 minutes, swapped out shoes and socks, finished the race. It was nuts. We still laugh about it to this day. He wasn't bleeding either.
Taz.
Taz.
You know, I one of the things I talk about with some of my clients and also on this podcast is this idea that like we always show up for other people. You know, if like your boss or somebody you really respect, like call, you know, says, hey, let's have lunch. You're early, you're well-dressed, you're ready to go, you're caffeinated or whatever. We don't do that for ourselves, right? It's easy for us to say, oh, I don't need to go to the gym. Oh, I don't need to really show up well for myself. And I'm always trying to get people to shift, like treat yourself like your boss. Treat yourself like the most important person. And that relationship with like, I'm going to the gym today. I'm going to do a good job at this thing today, whatever it is. Like, it's so important. But there is something like just innate in us. You know, it's the human condition of like connection with others, of wanting to not disappoint others, that I think is a truly powerful lever to pull. And, you know, your son, I can only imagine your son on his bike, Dad, no, you know,
yeah.
Mom's good. And just like but how much juice you can squeeze from just like the thought of your son disappointed, or the thought of your son telling your wife. I mean, all those things, like, that is just juice to squeeze in those moments where you need it.
Yeah, and that was actually what kept me in the quintuple. So I was in New Orleans in November, racing five times the distance of an Ironman. So 12-mile swim, 560-mile bike, and what is that? 131-mile run. And I was on, I think, the bike. First of all, that month in New Orleans is supposed to be great weather. Cool, not too hot, not muggy. A freak storm came in. I got big storm. The swim had to be moved because of the rain and the lightning. So 8 hours of swimming in a swimming pool instead of a lake was brutal. And then the bike, everybody was getting flat tires. It was ice cold. And so I am just beat up. I don't have rain. I don't ride my bike in the rain. You know, I'm a fair weathered athlete. So all I had taken was all my hunting clothes. So I was wearing big bulky camouflage jackets and, you know, it was not aerodynamic. I was cold. My hands were frozen. I was tired. I was wiped out. It was about near the end of the bike. And I walked in, I parked the bike and went in to get some food. And I looked at this pile of wetsuits and I'm, you know, my mind's getting all, you know, mushy at this point, and they're all frozen. And I looked at them and I'm like, why am I out here in the ice in this crap? What do I have to prove? And I told my wife, I'm like, why am I out here? You know, this is just dumb. And she said to me, Dan, how many races have you done? How many things have you taken on and quit? I said, none, ever. And she goes, okay, what's your son going to say when you tell him you quit this one? And that was it. I was it. No more. Boom. I went another 2 days, 3 days, whatever it was, biking and running.
But I mean, you know, the legacy of a father and a son. You know, I have a 9-year-old son, and, you know, so I feel the same thing. It's like, you know, to leave a mark on him, you know, about like how to live the best, you know, version of himself, you know, as he gets older. He's looking at me, you know, competing, working out every day, doing all the things. You know, this poor 9-year-old knows more about protein, carbs, and fats than any 9-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, he knows. I take him to the gym already. We're doing basic stuff so that he can start to just develop movement patterns and coordination and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, you know, it's you're imprinting that legacy onto that child, and it's really a special, you know, obviously a special relationship, but
yeah,
you know, it's different from when you're just, you know, when I was just a guy, you know, even married without a kid. Like, it's just a different thing now as dads, almost a superpower that we can tap into if we really understand it.
Yeah, agree 100%. And there's these four rules that I always review after these races with my son. He's been to all but one of them. He didn't go to that quintuple because it lasted so long. It was 5.5 days of racing nonstop, and he had school. So, but otherwise, he was there and he watched me, and he watched me suffer, and he watched other people suffer. He watched other people endure and survive, and he watched other people bail out. And there's four things that I always impress upon him afterward. Number one is, anything is possible. Anything. Look at me. I am, you know, at this point, I'm almost 50 years old doing the quintuple or right in there. And I've had, you know, shoulder and knee injuries and other stuff. I'm not built like that kind of athlete. And I said, I'm going to do it. And I did it. Anything is possible. Number two, and crucial to that, is make a plan. You have to have a plan. I write my own plans, but if you don't know how to write a plan, get help and get a plan. But you need a plan. And along with that is follow it. You don't just have it, you follow it. And then be willing to adapt it. I have to travel, or I get sick, or there's a game on a weekend when I was planning a big training break. Whatever, adapt it. Don't get frustrated because things don't go according to plan. So number two, have a plan, follow it, and be willing to adapt it. Number three, ask for help. This should be number one. Worth mentioning is I'm in my 15th year of sobriety, and I couldn't have done that alone. I had to ask for help. And so ask for help, and following up on that is listen to what they freaking tell you. If you ask them for help and they tell you what to do, freaking listen to them. So if I tell my wife, I need your help, and she says you need to eat, don't say, no, I'm not going to eat. Eat. Do whatever she tells you to do, or don't ask for help. And the last thing is never, ever give up. Just don't quit. Just ask yourself, am I going to die? Is somebody else going to die? And if the answer is no, then put one foot in front of the other, either literally or, you know, figuratively, and get the freaking job done. That's it. Four rules.
There's a beautiful thing about an endurance race or something where the goal is to finish. I mean, if you're trying to be the fastest in the world, that's a different kind of animal altogether, because it's, you're looking at times and like, how do I, you know, who's in the heat, and I'm competing against that guy, and, you know, Taz or that guy is obviously, he's your enemy, and yeah, you got to get him.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it to like, I'm going to show up, I'm going to be my best version of myself, I'm going to complete this, I'm not going to quit, then one foot in front of the other is still progress.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, it kind of just allows you, hey, I've got this amount of time to do this thing and complete it. And I think that's just kind of a fantastic thing. I'm all about it. I think I don't do the long distance stuff, but even doing a bodybuilding show last year, you know, I signed up, I paid my money like 24 weeks out. And I'm like, I am not going back on my coach. We started the diet, all those things. And, you know, you just felt this momentum of like, I'm doing the work. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Everything is, you know, I'm trusting my coach. I'm listening to what he says, like you talk about, you know, and you pull all the levers you're supposed to pull, and you just show up at your best. Right? And it's a totally different concept, but it still requires the same mindset of like just the discipline of the day-to-day work.
Yeah. And it's rules for living. So your example is perfect. Let me give you another example. Getting a degree. Anything is possible. Make a plan. Be willing to shift it. Maybe change majors, change schools, but don't give up on that plan. Ask for help. You ask for help. Listen to what they tell you. And don't quit. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be ultra. Those are rules for living in any endeavor.
Yeah. That's really good. Now, you brought this up just a few minutes ago. I wanted, this is one of my questions for you. Really talk about sobriety. And I mean, I think starting out with this podcast where we were talking about your, you know, multiple, you know, Ironmans and these, like you, it could be very quickly the listener is now like, oh, this person is, you know, like a super athlete. I'm not like him, but there's a very real and, you know, humble side of you that is, you know, your growth, your path, the obstacles that you really had to overcome as a man. Talk about that and how sobriety plays into that.
Wow. You know, that is such a layered question and answer. But first of all, sobriety, for me, it was alcohol, and it was a progressive. It is a progressive disease. I was what's called a periodic. So I didn't drink every day, but when I drank, I drank like you've never seen drinking happen before. And I had a massive tolerance, and it just continued to affect me physically. So I was pumping iron 6 days a week. I was teaching self-defense 3 days a week. I was studying martial arts 3 days a week. I was still, you know, I thought I was doing everything right, but then couple times a month, I'd go on these major benders, and I needed help, and I knew I needed help, particularly after the doctor told me, you know, your high blood pressure. I was 50 pounds overweight at the time, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. I had diverticulosis. I had esophageal stricture. I had ulcers. I had bad arthritis, a lot of cortisone shots, the list goes on. And something had to change. And so when I changed and got sober, I also changed careers. Now I had already bought a couple of franchises. I was a PT instructor at a couple of colleges for fire academies and police academies. And of course the one that I ran, because I was in law enforcement at the time, but I wanted to dive in 100%. I'd been told that that's what I should do. And so when I got into full-time private world of fitness, there was a big learning curve, but I wanted to prove to myself, and I was sober, I wanted to prove to myself that I wasn't a failure, that I wasn't falling apart, that I was, you know, I was 40 years old at the time, that the best days were not behind me. So really, actually, sobriety, one of the effects it had on me is I wanted to prove to myself, and I think to others, that I'm okay, and I can do cool stuff, and I'm not falling apart, like the doctor said, and like you said, I'm okay. And then when I started getting into endurance stuff, which was shortly after, within about a year, that became my why for the first several years. I started writing a book. I haven't finished it. I'm halfway through it. And I told myself, I'm not going to be able to write a book until I've done some cool stuff. And it landed on doing an Ironman. And then I did an Ironman. I'm like, well, that wasn't that tough. That's not worthy of a book. I need to do something harder. And then I did the double. And early in my racing years, that was my why. And then my mom passed away right in there. And I'm like, I need to show mom that I'm okay, that I'm physically healthy, that I can do tough things. That was my why. It wasn't until later in that journey that it shifted over more to my family than to my son, sadly, but true. So sobriety in the early days, it was me proving to myself that I'm okay and that I can do stuff still, because I was a very much an adrenaline junkie. I was a specialty diver, a rescue diver, a specialty scuba diver, a self-defense instructor, firearms instructor, taught a lot of stuff, trained in a lot of stuff. I called myself a high-speed, low-drag ninja warrior, and I thought I was unstoppable. And that led to my demise.
That's the name of your book, by the
way. Yeah. That was
the high speed, low drag ninja warrior.
Yeah. I learned it from a Navy SEAL, actually. I didn't make it up. That I was training with, I was in one of his classes, and he said that. And I'm like, okay, I'm stealing that. So that was how I ran. And I didn't want to just be like, okay, I'm not doing this stuff anymore. I still want to be able to do hard things, but I need to change my mindset. And I would basically walk around paranoid. You call it always being in yellow, ready to react to orange and to red. So you're always thinking somebody's out to. In fact, one of my sayings that I trained the people that I taught the people I trained is: be polite, be professional, be prepared to kill everybody in the room. So you're always paranoid, and so taking all that energy and all that stress and going to none was a big mind shift for me. So I had to find a way, an outlet, to continue to challenge myself. And endurance was my outlet.
Yeah, and so often, like, people that have a tendency to addiction, for addiction, whether it's whatever the addiction, like, can find it in a healthy way, in a sport, in some sort of a challenge. And that's, you know, and those who don't find that tend to find an unhealthy version of it.
You're absolutely right. Some
other vice and that kind of thing. So I'm that way. I mean, I'm not necessarily, I don't have specifically an addictive past, but I know that about the way I obsess about working out and things like that. Like, there are times where I'm like, you know, on vacation, Googling the bodybuilding gym nearby, going like, maybe this is too much.
We call that all or nothing, Bart. You're an all or nothing guy.
It's all there. Yeah, it is.
And
there it is.
That's okay. You know, my wife gives me crap, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've embraced it now at 48. I'm like, hey, this is who I am. It's not going to be, you know, at some point, I just never want to not be able to do it. So that's also the injury prevention part that, like, is so important. And we're both, you know, obviously in the fitness industry, and I'm, you know, training people really focused on longevity and this whole, like, you know, I mean, obviously there's all this like, let's take all these things to keep us young. But I think there's so much about movement, about just changing the way we move. One of the biggest things I've been preaching to the world ever since I started last year was yoga.
Yeah.
And combining strength training and yoga and various disciplines and to really make sure my body never just breaks from too much of the same thing over and over. Talk about your experience with, you know, this kind of longevity movement and what your perspective being in the industry for so long and being an athlete and all that lends to your thoughts on like what we should be focused on in our 40s and 50s.
Oh man, that's great. And I actually left out a part and I'm glad I did because that's where this gets plugged. So at 40, again, I don't know if you'd call it an adrenaline junkie, but I think so. So I told you about how I, you know, looked at the world is it's always a threat. And so I was stressed to the max. I had insomnia, all kinds of, you know, I just never slowed down, right? I just never slowed down. I had bosses get me in trouble for working all the time. They're like, you can't work all the time because it reflects poorly on the rest of the team. You know, you're writing this many
Everyone
tickets.
Else looks bad because yeah, I'm not working as
yeah,
hard.
Yeah. And it's not that I'm working any harder. It's because I'm working more hours beyond what I'm getting paid for. And so that was just my personality and it created a lot of stress. So when I went into fitness, I got so lucky. I'm a man of faith. And this was a God thing that I was told about a guy. I went to an NASM workshop, which is who I work for now. But I was originally certified through a National Academy of Sports Medicine. I went to a workshop and they said, oh, you're from Yuba City, California. I said, yeah. And the guy said, my good friend and former NASM person, Rodney Korn, lives in Yuba City. So I said, I don't suppose you could give me his phone number. And he said, no, but you'll find it. You know, and back then we had phone books. And so I've actually found his name and I called him and just out of the blue and asked for advice and found out we went to the same church. We went to the same gym. I met him. And he started mentoring me. He had just co-founded a company called PTA Global, Personal Training Academy Global. Years later, I was the executive vice president of it. So long story in between there. But Rodney was the director of education at National Academy of Sports Medicine. So he a very smart guy. He's still in the industry. Director of education for LACO. And Rod started teaching me about stress. And he started training me to mentor me. And he actually gave me the science. He had to, because that's my mind. Don't just tell me what to do. Tell me why. And to answer your question, Bart, what I learned is that I was way out of balance. I was lifting heavy weights like a bodybuilder for 20, 30 years. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well enough. And he taught me balance and he taught me daily readiness. And he taught me 9 questions to ask your clients or to ask yourself before you train each and every time you train. And then you turn the dials on that workout based on the responses. So what I ended up doing was a lot less work physically. And my fitness completely changed. My wife said I morphed. That's the word she uses. M-O-R-P-H-E-D, morphed. She said, you morphed your body. You completely look different. And I do. If you look at pictures of me before and you look at me now, I look very different. I changed. And it was because I learned how to sleep. I learned how to train less. I learned when I should and shouldn't train. It wasn't about, you know, the volume. It was about the quality of the movement and three-dimensional movement, to your point, Bart. I had done the same movements for 20, 30 years. I went through a powerlifting phase. My body was beat up. My joints were beat up. So incorporating three-dimensional movement, three-dimensional loads, using myofascial lines as a lens to look at the body by Dr. Thomas Myers, and in loading and unloading and movement completely changed me. Here's the deal. So when I was in enforcement, I was, like I said, I was a specialty diver and I was an FBI instructor. So every year I had to take several physical tests. The worst one was the 5-mile run and the swim. So the 5-mile run was for the FBI. The swim was for the diving. I would get physically ill the night before the swim because I was a horrible swimmer. I just terrible. I was a rescue diver with fins on. Put fins on, I can kick butt. But if it's just my nothing on, swimming in a pool, I sink. I don't know what I'm doing. I swallow a lot of water. And then running was so painful. I'd hurt my knee playing football in college. I had a couple surgeries on it. It was just sucked. I didn't like to run. And so I'd go do this 5 mile run and I'd suffer for a week afterward. Fast forward, I'm doing Ironmans, right? Swimming long distances and running. All of that was possible because I changed the way I trained and the way I moved, and my joints quit hurting and I felt better. So how do you train for a quintuple Ironman? You don't, you know, you can't overtrain. You end up under recovering. So the biggest takeaway for us as aging men and women, I know we're kind of geared toward, I think it's the 40 to 60 year old men on this podcast, but I think the biggest takeaway for us as we're aging is be smart about your recovery. Be smart about recovery. That's the key.
Talk about sleep.
Oh, sleep.
How important is sleep?
It's number one.
Because I there's guys out there, there's guys out there buying their own cold plunge and sauna,
number
personal
one.
Saunas and all that. Yeah.
It's funny you ask that. Yeah. So during when COVID kicked in and the company I worked for had been bought by National Academy of Sports Medicine and I wasn't sure where I was going to land. I actually was helping some people out and a guy named Dr. Michael Bruce, they call him the sleep doctor. He's been on Good Morning America and all these different shows. He's very well known, public speaker. I got connected with him and he asked me to vet his course, his sleep course. So I went through the entire course, gave him my feedback and so forth. And that was like phase two of changing my sleep. First of all, I started sleeping because it used to be I'll sleep when I'm dead, I'll drink when I'm done. Don't give me water. I don't carry water bottles. I can wrestle on the mat for 4 hours straight and water's for weenies. I'll drink when I'm done. And that was kind of like,
college basketball coach would say, water makes you weak.
Yeah.
Back online.
Yeah. Like, so that was kind of the mindset I brought. Right.
Thing.
And so I had already improved my sleep, but this was next level. And going through and practicing the majority of the things that he taught in that course literally changed everything for me about whatever it was, 2020. Ironically, I just reconnected with him. I am a chairman of one of the Rex Roundtables for Executives Roundtables. So I chair a group of fitness leaders. And then the Rex Roundtables, there's, I think, 20 different roundtables representing about, 2,000 health clubs globally. We meet before IHRSA and we always need a keynote. The sleep doctor is going to be our keynote. So I'm going to introduce him and he's going to talk about the importance of sleep for performance as in job performance and member, the members of health clubs and how they benefit from improving their sleep. So sleep, a number one, I don't think you have to go too nuts on it. Yes, you can do the different new technology. I think most of it is great stuff. But simple things like powering down an hour before you go to bed, getting rid of blue lights. All our light bulbs are flipped out, switched out with blue light blocking bulbs for that last part of the evening. If you're streaming to your TV, stream it with blue light blocking. Dark room, same bedtime. Understanding your chronotype because we're all different. I'm an early bird, which is the lion in the chronotypes. There's lion, bear, dolphin, and bear, lion, wolf, dolphin, and bear with Dr. Sleep. No caffeine for at least the first 90 minutes when you get up in the morning. All these little hacks that have definitely made life better. And wearables. Wearables are great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think it's like exercise. If you don't exercise, start exercising. If you don't feel healthy, start sleeping well. You know what I mean? Like, yep. I feel like there's so much of like our energy, when we are sleep deprived, the frontal cortex, I mean, you're over here literally hallucinating.
Yeah.
Like your brain is telling you there are things there that are not actually there. Like, and that so much of that is sleep deprivation and how that affects our ability to have willpower. You know, you want to be, you know, somebody who has a disciplined mindset. Try going, 3 hours of sleep at night, two nights in a row and make any great decisions in your day. Like I can't, I'm like, all I'm thinking about is how do I get a nap? That's what I'm thinking about.
And what's crazy about it is once you've incorporated good sleeping, you know, when you've had a poor night's sleep. I mean, I know all day long. I know.
Yeah.
That's how I lived every day, you know, back in the day. And I didn't realize that wasn't normal. But real quick, I want to mention, because you've kind of been hitting all over it, I actually have spoke and done lectures all over the world on stress and the autonomic nervous system. All learned from Rod. I'm not a smart guy. Everything I teach, I learned from somebody else. I've never invented anything or done any research. So what I learned from Rod and what I shared with others is it's three buckets, and that's those nine questions. So the first one is lifestyle. That is, and it starts with sleep. How much sleep did you get last night? Do you feel well rested? They're different. Hydration and nutrition. Those are the three components of lifestyle. Are you, when did you eat? What have you eaten? How hydrated are you? There's lifestyle. Then you have the physical bucket, which is what training have you done in the last 24 or 48 hours? What did you do? Are you in any pain? Do you have any injuries? Are you sore? And then there's the mental emotional bucket. So how motivated are you? How stressed are you? All of those are stress. We think of stress as just being emotional. We don't think about the fact that all those other things create stress. And when your stress levels go up, we emit more cortisol, right? The hormone cortisol, which is good. We need cortisol. That's part of your fight or flight hormone package, for lack of a better word, which, raises your heart rate and your breathing and gives you more tunnel vision so that you can do what you need to do. It kind of shuts down your immune system. But if you're constantly bathing in it, I call it a cortisol shower, that's when bad things happen. Your immune system is compromised. You get injured. Yeah. You can't think straight. And here's the biggie. You gain weight. You gain body fat. And here's the second component. You lose muscle and bone density. So chronic stress does exactly the opposite of what most people are trying to do in the gym. You're spinning your wheels, man. If you're already stressed, working out adds more stress. You're actually going to go backwards. And that's why it's so important to understand where a person is each and every day, or yourself, and incorporate those stress reduction principles, whether it's lifestyle, physical, or mental, emotional, so that you're not putting so much stress in the system that you're actually hurting yourself by working out today.
Right. And they're not going to get the results that they're looking for anyway, if they're at the gym, if they're just dealing with a body that's just pumping full of cortisol and stress and, anxiety and all that kind of stuff.
That was me. That's why I was falling apart.
Yeah. Well, and a bit of a plug on my end. So I've rolled out this, what I call concierge fitness training, and it's really looking at all of it. Like, I just feel like too many trainers, they just come in, they give you the workout, they kick your butt, they get paid by the hour, and there's not a lot else in terms of like how they're looking at the whole thing. And this is really what I've just realized over the years of doing this. It's like, we have to look at everything. We have to look at sleep. We've got to look at all these factors. And, and so that's the way I'm trying to like care for people now, is really not just like let them see me as an hour to hour trainer. I pay you for the hour. Thank you very much. I'll see you next Thursday or whatever. Like, this is a relationship. We're building something together, that journey that we're going on. And so I'm glad you're saying this, because it's exactly the way I feel. Like, I mean, people will show up. It's like, I want to train with you. Great. Right. Because they like you said, I'm tall, I'm impressive, but like, I'm like, okay, well, let's look at this, and this. How are those things going? Right. Like, you start asking those nine questions and you realize like they don't need to be doing a whole bunch of strength training.
Well,
they need to pull these other levers for a couple of weeks, get their system back to like neutral or normal, and then start adding the stress.
And that's what happened to me. I'm training with Rodney Korn, who assembled the OPT model under the guidance of Dr. Mike Clark at National Academy of Sports Medicine decades ago.
Yeah.
Knows everything, former bodybuilder, built like, amazing. You wouldn't believe, when he tells you all of this, you're like, you've got to be kidding me. He looks like a kid because he's in such great shape and his skin and all of these things. And I'm training with him. I'm like, oh my God. I told my wife, I'm like, Rod's going to train me. And he was cutting back sets. He was cutting back weight. Some days we would like skip the heavy weight. And I'm like, what's so great about this guy? Because my wife can tell you, I would come home frustrated because he had me playing with balloons and laughing. and mobilizing instead of pushing heavy weight. But in short order, my pains went away, my weight started dropping, and he uses me as an example to this day of what happens when you relieve that stress. So, Bart, I will say this. I have no scientific study or research to back this. And if I offend any listeners out there, I'm sorry, but I'm not. Less than 1% of the trainers, in my opinion, in our industry, incorporate what you're doing, period. The majority, greater than half, certainly do exactly what you described. You're paying me to beat you up for 3 hours a week. If you're not sore, you're not happy. That's my job. I can't tell you how many times my client showed up and I put the clipboard down and said, nope, we're not doing what I had planned for you today because of the answers to those 9 questions. And that's why I kept clients for a long time, because their lives got better. They felt better. They looked better. They moved better. Not because I trashed them 3 days a week.
That is a God. Hallelujah.
You're on it.
You know, I mean, yeah. And I think this is why you and I connected so well. And you know, one of the reasons is just like, you know, understanding that the whole person, how do you address the whole person? And that's awesome. Yeah. And I think especially, I mean, in your 20s and 30s, like, you know, I feel like we're more than not, we're made of rubber bands and we can just kind of beat ourselves up more. We've got the nervous system strong and youthful. It's going to bounce back pretty quickly. Lots of testosterone to make mistakes and still not like, and still be able to course correct. But 40, for me, it was like really 44, where like, I felt like the wheels were just falling off, this, you know, and I had to like really get smart, right? Really figure things out, really dial in stuff. And whatever age that is for that person where they start to feel like that, you know, where just things are slowing and things are harder and you're injured more often, like that is a time to really find that discipline, find that, go get somebody who can help you with the information that understands the whole thing.
Absolutely. Rodney calls it God's periodization plan. So you end up with an injury. That means you have to decrease your training. Mission accomplished. You didn't listen to your body. You didn't do the things you need to. And so you end up injuring yourself, whether it's from chronic cortisol. Well, generally it is chronic cortisol because connective tissue weakens. Type 1 fibers don't fire first like they're supposed to, right? So if you remember the size principle from anatomy and physiology in your personal training, type 1 has to fire before 2 and 3 or 2A and 2B to create tension and stability in a joint. Chronic cortisol decreases the type 1 firing, so you don't have stability in the joint. Then you put force through it, then you get hurt, then you take 6 months off, 2 months off, and God goes, yeah, I told you needed a break, so I gave it to you. And I am guilty of that one. Definitely was.
Well, and that's the, we know this guy, Cody Hill, trainer from Camp Gladiator is where we know him, but he's a trainer here in Austin. And he's like, one less rep than what you think you could do, not going to be a big deal. One more rep than you probably should could be a really big deal.
I like that. You know, I mean, like,
it's that, like, you know, and it's hard to know. This is where you have to know your body and you have to be really dialed into like what's the purpose of going for that final rep or pushing past failure or whatever. Like, why are we doing this? Is this the right time to be doing this? Like, are all the other, you know, levers pulled properly so that we're hydrated and you know, ready for this type of work, you know, and all those things matter. Like, we can't just like, I feel good today. I don't know. There's a cute girl doing squats next to me. I'm going to go heavy. Like we have to be smarter than that.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're saying reminds me of the importance of staying up on research. So we have to continuously be learning and learning what's the latest, right? Because, all science changes every year and what we thought was right, was wrong. We spent a couple of years in lockdown, I think. There might have been a little bit going on around that. We don't know. And, you know, what's the oldest science in the world? Astronomy. And we still haven't got that one nailed. So I say that because, for example, if, you know, in all my years, it was 4, 5, 6 sets of 8, 6 to 8 reps. That's how you get buffed. No, actually, the science has shown you can get buffed doing 20 reps. You don't have to do those heavy loads. And some very recent research that ACE actually published demonstrates that you don't have to train to failure for the same gains in hypertrophy. It actually, you just have to train to a point that the rhythm or the tempo, what we would call, is being affected by the fatigue. So if your reps are slowing down because they're becoming more difficult, you've achieved what you need to achieve for that adaptation, that progressive overload and that specific adaptation to occur. You don't have to go to failure and you don't have to eke out that last rep. So that's where science is your friend and you want to be paying attention. And when you're my age, that's really good news.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's so like hard for people to wrap their head around. It's like, well, obviously the more I push, the closer I get to failure, the more I'm, you know, breaking down those little muscle fibers and they're going to grow back and I'm going to be stronger or bigger for it or whatever the adaptation you're trying to achieve. And A, you're closer to injury, and B, you may not even be accelerating that process of adaptation by doing that one thing, and that's great. I mean, I was just listening to one of the Star Talk podcasts with Neil deGrasse Tyson. They were talking about how Einstein was looking at like black holes and relativity, and there was some force that he couldn't explain, and he was so frustrated. He just called it like the gravitational force, like the anti-gravitational force. And then he disproved it, and then he died, and they reproved that what he wanted to disprove was actually true again. So the force Einstein. Okay. Yeah. So this guy in like 1917, like figures out that there's like, in order for all these things, there has to be kind of an anti-gravity, anti-matter, but he hates the idea. So he basically tries to disprove it, finds a way to disprove it. And then like 30 years after his death, they rediscovered that with more information for better telescopes and all that kind of stuff, that he was actually correct the first time.
There you go.
Like that, you know, and that is the beauty of science. It's like, we're always trying to get closer to the truth. We never actually have the specific truth, and strength training, fitness is like that too. Yeah. There's so many variables.
Human
is the biggest variable of all.
Yeah. And you know, again, on that theme, it's just we just have to remind ourselves of the science behind adaptation, whether it's run further, jump higher, lift more, or grow the size, the cross-sectional density of a muscle fiber to get more muscular. Whatever it may be, you're just adapting to stress that you're putting in your body, and consistency and time is your friend. We're in such a society of immediate gratification. And I would say the internet has certainly, I'm not an expert in this space, but has certainly been the leading cause of that immediate gratification. I mean, if I need a pair of work gloves because, mine aren't warm enough, I can have them here tomorrow with Amazon, and I live out in the sticks, and they're still going to show up here tomorrow. And I know that because I just ordered some. So, that we all expect things quickly, but there's going to be a price to be paid physically if we look at those adaptations through that lens. So just be consistent. We call it the C word in my house, and you can't see me because we're on a podcast, but I'm making a C with my hand, and that's what I teach my kids, is it's all about consistent. Let's see. There's no perfect workout. There's no perfect exercise. There isn't. They don't exist. But whatever it is you do, just be consistent with it. And that applies to all things. And if you're consistent with it, you're going to adapt to it. So don't kill yourself. Just be consistent, and you will adapt, and you will achieve those things you want to do. Others call it discipline.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to knowing what you want and doing it on a, consistently doing it on a daily basis. Now the challenge with that is I don't want to overtrain, right? Like somebody could take that information and be like, Dan told me, be consistent. I'm going to the gym every day. I'm doing squats. I'm doing bench press. And then they get injured. So when you talk about consistency, the big C in that sense, what are some, just so we can kind of like end on this note, like what's your recommendation for just creating enough variety around strength training, cardio, recovery, things like that, to allow somebody to kind of really like find a rhythm of health without overdoing it?
Well, that's a tough one because it comes down to goals.
Everyone's different.
Yeah, it comes down to goals. But if we were just to look at aging well, right? Mm-hmm. It starts with the exercise for you is the one you'll do. It starts with that. So yeah. I am, you know, out here in the sticks in Idaho, I have 5 acres, 120, 130 fruit trees, chickens. I'm putting cows back in. So I've got to build a fence this spring. I have a lot of physical work to do. I build things out of wood. I build things out of steel. That is movement. If that's all I did and never went to the gym, I'm doing well. If I'm consistently moving, if I'm in a big garden, so you're out pushing a shovel, you're pulling weeds, whatever it may be, if you're moving, you're doing well. I'm not going to lie, I used to think the whole steps thing, I believe in it, and I believe in the 10,000 steps a day, but like wearing it and getting anal retentive about it, that's dumb. Then I got one that started counting it, and I'm hooked. And so if I don't meet my activity level every day, I find a way to meet my activity level. And when it says 200%, which is not a lot for activity level, right? I'm like stoked, but I know I don't want to do that every day. But the bottom line is move consistently. Move in three dimensions, pick things up, play with your kids. I used to teach weight loss classes. My wife and I did when I first got into the industry. The guy that absolutely smoked it and kept the weight off and beat everybody in this weight loss challenge never worked out in the gym. He did one session with me. He was an attorney and he just didn't have time. He's like, you know what? I can't commit to this. He danced with his kids every night. He danced with his kids till they were just sweating and giggling and having fun. And he lost more weight than everybody else in the challenge. So move. If you're strength training, if that's your gig, I like total body workouts 3 times a week. Get everything under a load. You don't even have to worry about biceps and triceps because they get used when you push and you pull. So just do some total body work 3 times a week. Find a way to get your heart rate up, whether it's during that, before it, or after that. I mean, there's, you know, another conversation to be had around it, or on the other days, which is what I like. So, you know, the 150 minutes of exercise at a moderate intensity that the Centers for Disease Control recommends is spot on, and it's hard to do. If you do that, you're doing well. 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity, 300 at low, 75 at high, move in three dimensions. That's like lowest common denominator right there. And eat well and sleep well, hydrate well, you're on your way.
Yeah. Beautiful stuff, man. I love everything about, I mean, you're a man who's been, you know, you have your own journey with your as an athlete, you know, as an ultra endurance athlete, as a father, as a husband, all these things. And you're also like really helping to provide for the industry of personal training and kind of and self-improvement really is kind of the overarching thing, is like helping people get better. And so I just really honor your time. You're taking the space to fit me in your schedule.
Hey, really, anytime. The feeling is mutual. It's an honor, buddy.
Yeah, brother. All right. Hey, great episode. By the way, funny story, you know, one of the things that Dan and I realized in our conversations was that the lawyer who lost the most weight in his fitness challenge is my cousin. It's my cousin Greg in Yuba City. And so that was funny because I had found out that he trained my cousin. And so when he told that story and he mentioned that the guy was a lawyer and he danced with his kids, I was like, oh my God, I bet that's Greg. And so I asked him at the end of the episode, he was like, yeah, actually it was. If you have any comments, thoughts on the episode, maybe something that really stood out for you about Dan's perspective or the things we talked about, definitely go to one of my social media channels, either Instagram, send me a DM, or go to Facebook, drop something in the comments. Of course, if you feel like you just want to send something privately, you can just email me. That's in the show notes. But I'd love to get your feedback, what you're loving, and any thoughts you have. And last but not least, I'm looking for trainers, both online coaches and in-person trainers here in the Austin, Texas area. So if you're interested, send me an email, find that in the show notes, and let's chat. I'd love to hear what you're up to and find out if you're a fit for Team Brian Wellness and our concierge program. Thanks again for listening to the Mindset Forge podcast. Let's be 1% better this week and make sure we're moving towards becoming the best version of ourselves.